next door. We catch a few odd stares. Myself, soaked and battered in my outdoors gear. D.I. Sullivan in the wreckage of an expensive grey suit, oversized handgun clenched in a death grip at her side. But wisely or otherwise, nobody asks me to fix the internet or demands to know why we're tracking muddy water through human resources. By the time we reach the thick green carpet and dusty quietude of the director's suite, Josephine's eyes are wide, but she's stopped shaking. "You've got lots of questions," I managed to say. "Try to save them for later. I'll tell you everything I know and you're cleared for once I've had time to phone my fiancé." "I've got a husband and a 9-year-old son. Did you think of that before you dragged me into this insane nightmare?" "Sorry. I know you didn't mean to. It's just that shooting up zombies and being zapped by basilisks makes me a little upset. Nerves." "I know. Just try not to wave them in front of Angleton, okay?" "Who is Angleton, anyway? Who does he think he is?" I pause before the office door. "If I knew that, I'm not sure I'd be allowed to tell you." I knock 3 times.
"Enter."
Andy opens the door for us. Angleton is sitting in the director's chair, playing with something in the middle of the huge expanse of oak desk that looks as if it dates to the 1930s. There's a map on the wall behind him, and a quarter of it is pink.
"Ah, Mr. Howard, Detective Inspector. So good of you to come."
I peer closer. Clack, clack, clack. A Newton's cradle. How 1970s.
"You could say that."
He smiles thinly. The balls bouncing back and forth between the arms of the executive desktop aren't chromed. Rather, they appear to be textured. Pale brown on one side, dark or blonde and furry on the other. And bumpy, disturbingly bumpy. I take a deep breath. "Harriet was waiting for us. Said we were too late and the counter-possession unit was being disbanded." Clack, clack.
"Yes, she would say that, wouldn't she?"
Clack, 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 clack. Finally, I can't stand it anymore. "Well?" I demand.
"A fellow I used to know, his name was Ulyanov, once said something rather profound, you know."
Angleton looks like the cat that swallowed the canary, and the feet are sticking out of the side of his mouth. He wants me to know this, whatever it is.
"Let your enemies sell you enough rope to hang them with."
Wasn't that Lenin? I ask. A flicker of mild irritation crosses his face.
"This was before then," he says quietly. Clack, clack, clack.
He flicks the balls to set them banging again, and I suddenly realize what they are and feel quite sick. No, indeed. Bridget and Harriet, and Bridget's predecessor, and the mysterious Mr. McLuhan, won't be troubling me again. Except in my nightmares about this office, visions of my own shrunken head winding up in one of the director's executive toys, skull clattering away eternally in a scream that nobody can hear anymore.
"Bridget's been plotting a boardroom coup for a long time, Robert. Probably since before you joined the laundry, or were conscripted."
He spares Josephine a long, appraising look.
"She suborned Harriet, bribed McLuhan, installed her own corrupt Gesh on Voss. Partners in crime, intending to expose me as an incompetent and a possible security leak before the Board of Auditors, I suppose. That's usually how they plan it. I guessed this was going on, but I needed firm evidence. You supplied it. Unfortunately, Bridget was never too stable. When she realized that I knew, she ordered Voss to remove the witnesses, then summoned McLuhan and proceeded with her palace coup d'etat. Equally unfortunately for her, she failed to correctly establish who my line manager was before she attempted to go over my head to have me removed."
He taps the sign on the front of the desk. Private secretary. Keeper of the secrets. Whose secrets?
Matrix management,
I finally say, the light bulb coming on above my head at last. The laundry runs on matrix management. She saw you on the org chart as head of the counter-possession unit, not as private secretary to... So that's how come he's got the free run of the director's office. Josephine is aghast. You call this a government department?
Worse things happen in Parliament every day of the year, my dear.
Now that the proximate threat is over, Angleton looks remarkably imperturbable. Right now, I doubt he'd turn her into a frog, even if she started yelling at him.
Besides, you are aware of the maxim that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Here we deal every day of the week with power sufficient to destroy your mind. Even worse, we cannot submit to public oversight. It's far too dangerous, like giving atomic firecrackers to three-year-olds. Ask Robert to tell you what he did to attract our attention later, if you like.
I'm still dripping and cold, but I can feel my ears flush. He focuses on her some more.
We can reinforce the Gesh and release you, he adds quietly, but I think you can do a much more important job here. The choice is yours.
I snort under my breath. She glances at me, eyes narrowed and cynical. If this is what passes for a field investigation in your department, you need me.
Yes, well, you don't need to make your mind up immediately. Detached duty and all that. As for you, Bob, he says with heavy emphasis on my name, you have acquitted yourself satisfactorily again. Now go and have a bath before you rot the carpet.
Bathroom's two doors down the hall on the left, Andy adds helpfully from his station against the wall, next to the door. There's no doubt right now as to who's in charge here.
But what happens now? I ask, bewildered and a bit shocky, and already fighting off the yawns that come on when people stop trying to kill me. I mean, what's really happened?
Angleton grins like a skull.
Bridget forfeited her department, so the directors have asked me to put Andrew in acting charge of it for the time being. Boris slipped up and failed to notice McLuhan. He is, temporarily indisposed. And as for you, a job well done wins its natural reward. Another job.
His grin widens.
As I believe the youth of today say, don't have a cow.
The End. You've been listening to Concrete Jungle, the second and final part of The Atrocity Archives by Charles Stross. This book was narrated by Gideon Emery. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.